Welcome to another edition of the Psych Monologues. I am Dr. Ray Mitch, your humble host. How are we doing tonight? It's a big part of the day. I wonder how many people really actually relished the extra hour of sleep that we got, at least around here. I know that other parts of the country don't necessarily make changes, or of the world. We've got a few smattering of people around the world that listen to the podcast. So it's good to have you. Thanks for taking the time out just to spend some time talking about life and about the issues that matter the most to us. If you are new, let me introduce you to exactly what the Psych Monologues is. It is a podcast that's actually trying to look at, explore the intersection of faith, psychology, and spiritual formation. That's really the nature of our spiritual journey with Jesus and our relationship with God, and what's the contour landscape of that like? So pull up a chair, get comfortable, relax. Let's talk about the stuff that matters. I said this last week, but there's a lot that I assume, maybe falsely, but I assume that the issues that I bump into by talking to people are going to be issues that matter to most of us, and that's a very much applicable to the topic I want to talk about tonight. This is a topic that I have talked about before, and I think it's worth our while for me to loop back around and talk about it again, because I think we tend to take it for granted. Actually, we do a better job talking about it than we do about living it. And the question I want to pose and try to look at and talk about a little bit is just, you know, what is so hard about accepting grace? And we obviously need to define our terms as far as what grace actually is, because in a lot of cases, what I have seen, I've even seen it myself, that I'm thankful, we're thankful for the grace that is offered us in our salvation and in our relationship to Jesus, but we don't live our lives that way the rest of the time. As a matter of fact, we seem to spend most of our lives living like we are in a contract to earn it and to show that we're actually even worthy of it, which is a interesting topic, actually, when you think about it, because the object of God's grace, he deems as worthy enough to offer that grace to, and when we really get down to it and think about it at any depth at all, we reflect God's image, and because of that reflection of that image, we have been the center of his range finder, if you will. We've been the center of his attention, his focus, so much so that at least in one part of Psalms, he refers to it as engraving us on his palms. That's a fair amount of effort. And what you're hearing in the background, if you're hearing that, is a helicopter going by. And no, we're not being attacked by Black Hawk helicopters or anything like that. Sorry for the distraction. So anyway, we are the subject and the focus of God's attention, and because of that, then we're offered grace. Now again, we've got to be clear about what it is we're talking about here, because there are two different sides of this. One is the offer of grace. The other is our willingness to accept, receive, and actually live in grace. Because there is a distinct difference between what we talk about and what we actually do. This connects up with something I was talking about last week in terms of our disconnected lives. We love to talk about stuff all the time, but then the minute it's out of our mouths and the conversation is over, we go back to doing exactly the same thing over and over and over again and get very frustrated and very upset I had somebody in one of the groups I was leading say exactly the same thing. We come back here and we talk about something and we talk about what we're going to do, and then we do absolutely nothing of it and come back and do it all over again. So what's the good of actually talking about it? And that's a fair question. That's a fair question. I think in some respects we get a little closer to the target as we talk more about it with someone. Now, if we keep it internal and just roll it over in our heads, before too long, it becomes this little engine of anxiety and restlessness and demandingness and perfectionism, and it just feeds this monster that is residing within us that we don't really usually identify. And of course, that is the monster of shame. And the voice of shame that says over and over again, you will be what you've always been, so just give up. Because you will never be enough. You will never do good enough. You will never perform well enough. You will never whatever it is. And the funny thing about it is we buy it hook, line, and sinker, because our language is riddled with enoughs. And I've, again, this is something I've talked about before, but enough is a comparison word. It's got to be compared to something. And so the minute I start talking about enough, grace is gone. It is not part of the conversation. It isn't, because I am only enough if I what? If I perform at a particular level, if someone is pleased or approving, then I'm enough? No. The bar just simply moves higher. It always does. It does for all of us. Whenever we're talking about that, and the funny little secret, dirty little secret underlying that is enough is very much tied to legalism. And measuring ourselves by some standard. Now, I'm not talking about all standards are bad. I'm not, don't walk down that path. But we're measuring ourselves by some standard, and the judge, jury, and executioner has already rendered the sentence. And the executioner is just waiting for us to finally give up, because then he'll just execute us. And that's really the backdrop, I think, to this conversation about accepting grace. We see it as weak, really. We see it as it's too good to be true. And most of the time in our world, that's true, right? If it's too good to be true, it probably is. And that, in our broken human world, that's generally true. But that's not the world that we say we live in. Where we really live in is that grace is actually the gift that keeps on giving, and it's one whether or not it's going to have any impact on us rests entirely with the person of accepting it. So we have to address the what we talk about being so very different from what we actually do. But I what I want to talk about, and then loop back around to some other issues that come up out of this, is why is it so hard? Because I have often been asked that question when I talk about this. I've spent a whopping 10 weeks talking about this with my classes. We're down in the final stretch of the semester with my students, and we're down to the last 4 weeks of classes, basically. I mean, we're 5 weeks away from the end of the semester. And all of this stuff comes to a head. And unfortunately, the worst part about it is that if I were doing a class like this, it would probably be better to have it be all year. But that can't be done, not with the curriculum, the way it's set up at any university for that matter. You hardly ever have classes that go a whole year. But it would be worth that, because the nature of having ourselves soaked in enough grace to finally begin to do things differently when it comes to motivations of our own hearts, and the behaviors of our own relationships, all of that really is a fundamental piece of what we have to do when we're living life. And that's key to keep in mind. So why is it so hard? And the first one I'd point to is that we carry within us, and again, this is tied into the image of God that is stamped on us. It is spiritually wired into us. But we carry within us a standard for justice. And there, you know, people that you bump into or that you're around, or maybe you're one of these that has a very exquisite sense of justice, that something is right or it's wrong. And if it's wrong, something has to be done. Someone has to be punished. And people have soft pedaled this justice thing and made it very situational in a lot of cases, that justice is important only in certain situations or with certain people or whatever. But grace, the thing about grace is that it violates our sense of justice. And with that, it violates our sense of, if somebody has done something wrong, that somebody needs to be punished. And so why is grace so hard to accept? It violates our sense that when we do something wrong, we should be punished. Now, let's be really clear about our terms here, because punishment and consequences are two very, very different things. And in Scripture, a very easy example that probably most people understand is King David when he committed adultery with Bathsheba. He repented of his sin. We find it in Psalm 51. But there was still a consequence to his behavior. Not only did he kill somebody, Bathsheba's husband, but Bathsheba got pregnant, and the baby dies eventually. And it's consequences. I'm not saying they're pretty or they're pleasant or anything like that, but it's not God punishing David. It's a natural consequence of going outside of the range of what God says is best for us. And so when we do something that to us feels like it's wrong, not that it's morally wrong, I've let somebody down, or I've not fulfilled expectations, or I haven't performed at a level that I think I should, someone needs to get punished, and that person is me. And so what I end up doing is seeking retribution for myself. And you can just check the landscape of your own life and what you tend to do, because we can do things overtly, kind of positively. What I mean by that is not that it's a good thing, but we do things overtly by punishing ourselves. You know, we'll withhold things from ourselves. Or we can also do something called self-sabotage, and what we'll do is we'll sabotage the good in our lives. So we can either do kind of removing ourselves and isolating ourselves, that's the punishment, or we can just have good things in our lives and shut them out and sabotage them. I mean, I've seen people pick fights. They've got a great relationship with someone who is truly good for them and good as a person, and they pick a fight, and it ends up going south, as it you would understand that it does, but in some small measure, they feel like they're getting what they deserve. And see, that's just it. Grace doesn't give us what we deserve. And that's what's so annoying, really, is we're not getting what we deserve. And so because of that, we have to convert it into something we understand, and that is a contract of some sort, something that's transactional, something that I trade. And so punishment is one way to do that. And there are a variety of forms of self-punishment. You can go back. I did a podcast on it a number of months ago. But punishment is something we do to ourselves in a variety of ways, in lesser ways. It may be really hard to, for us to even see it, quite honestly, because it is so woven into the fabric of how we motivate ourselves. Because in a lot of cases, when we punish ourselves, we believe that if I punish myself strongly enough and harshly enough, that finally I'll get it into my thick head and avoid whatever it is I'm getting punished for, and finally I'll shape up and do it the right way. But it's using the very tool, shame, of our demise in order to try to motivate us toward life. And it obviously can't work. So there's this thing about justice versus grace. And I'm not posing one against the other. There can be justice and grace, for sure. And the other thing that's really annoying about it in terms of grace is that it's just free. It costs the receiver nothing, and it costs the giver everything. And we don't like to be indebted to anyone. You know, that literally, I just read this not all that long ago. And a lot of you out there know I teach at a university, and I'll have my students do journals. And they talk about stuff, all sorts of stuff, that probably they wouldn't openly talk about with anyone, which is remarkable for one. And secondly, very courageous for another. And I've had people literally write that I don't like to be indebted to anyone. And I guess when I start thinking about it closely, I don't like being indebted to God either. Forget about how majestic and that he owns everything. Forget all about that. Because when push comes to shove and the rubber actually meets the road where I'm moving and I'm dealing with relationships and I'm thinking about me and my relationships and people in my life, it still comes down to that. I don't like being indebted, so I will do everything in my power to make sure that my account is as small as possible. And grace just keeps coming. And that's the annoying part of it, is it's not only free, but it's relentless. It never, ever stops. And that's when we start saying, It's too good to be true. It just can't. It can't keep coming. There is some point where grace stops, and God finally says, okay, enough. I've given you enough grace. Either get going or get yourself up, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, do what you got to do, because I'm done. And we've got lots of humans in our lives that do that, for sure. And there's a timer ticking. We hear it in our relationships. So we hate that it's free. It's given to us. And people that are coming to the faith, either having no background at all, this is just beyond belief, literally beyond belief, that God offers us this kind of grace to be in relationship with him. And those of us that are running away from faith have found it so disconcerting, partly because the people that represent Jesus are giving us an image of Jesus that doesn't even match the Jesus of Scripture and the kind of grace that he offers people. You know, I was just studying with my men's group not all that long ago in Mark, and Jesus has two interactions with people. One of somebody that was a leader of the synagogue whose daughter was sick. And another one that was completely incidental. It was not planned. See, the leader approaches Jesus and says, please heal my daughter. And Jesus says, take me to her. And they're on their way, and they get rudely interrupted by a woman who touches Jesus. Now, this, just think of the scene. Because Jesus is getting pressed in on all sides. And the leader is leading him. Who knows what the conversation is and how far it is to his house. But they're moving, and suddenly Jesus stops and says, somebody touched me, and the power left me. And this is this woman who has been bleeding for 12 years And she has been ostracized and marginalized and just completely rejected by her community and her culture in every way. In every way, for something that she couldn't even do anything about. As a matter of fact, some of the attempts at trying to help her are make it worse. So this is somebody that is on the fringes of society. And I'll bet you anything that either we feel that way or we know somebody who feels that way. And when she says, okay, I don't want all of Jesus. I just want enough to heal me portion of Jesus, literally. And so she touches him. Now, if you've ever seen, like, and I haven't, I would love to see it sometime, the Shroud of Turin or some of the other relics that are in Italy and other places that we have, and they have this kind of what we would see is kind of magical quality almost, that we're touching something that Jesus touched, or we're walking places. People feel this way when they go to the Holy Land. They're walking the stones that Jesus walked on. There's something not strangely magical, but immensely powerful in doing that. And that's exactly what she was looking at as him. She wasn't seeing him as the Son of God or Jesus, the healer, or the rabbi, she was just seeing him as an object. All I got to do is touch him. That's all I want. I don't want too much. I want just enough. I want just enough to heal me. That's all. And Jesus outs her. And this is her oh crap moment, right? Because apparently you don't do that. And in that society, it's like, think about what would go through your mind if you thought that way, approached somebody like Jesus that way, and he says, somebody touched me. Like I said, it's an oh crap moment. And the next thing is here we go again. I am going to be even worse ostracized, even worse marginalized, even more thrown out of my culture. But she comes forward and bows before Jesus, and he says, what? How dare you touch me? What were you thinking? No, he doesn't do that. He looks her in the eye, and I don't know what happened. We're not told what was happened. But I can't help but think that Jesus, being who he was, reached down and raised her chin so that she could look him in the eye, and he says, daughter, what do you desire? So instantly this woman is reintroduced into the community when he addresses her as daughter. That's a powerful gift. It's a powerful moment that Jesus offers to that person. And I think in a lot of cases, we've got a strange view of who Jesus is. And people that are leaving the church in droves think Christians are representative of Jesus. And unfortunately, we're not. There are some of us that are trying to hang on to as pure of an understanding of who Jesus is as we can. We don't get it right. But they judge us by what? Well, how we relate. Not what we do, how we relate. And that's what's missing sometimes. So the whole thing about being free, this woman is overwhelmed by freedom, by his free offer of this gift. And it communicates worth and value to her completely. And it reestablishes the imago Dei in her that has been completely squashed and pressed down and rejected entirely. He reestablishes it, and he gives immense dignity back to this woman that has lost it after 12 years. And you can imagine anything that you've struggled with over 12 years' time, before too long you say, oh, I give. I'm done. I can't keep doing this anymore. I just can't. So there's that, all right? The justice piece, the free piece, the gift that it's given, and it's, and you know, we're coming up on Christmas, right? And there are gifts. And imagine, just imagine for a moment, somebody gives you a gift. You go to a friend's house or whatever, and you get it. They give you a gift, and you walk away, and you stop by the front doors. You're saying goodbye and thank yous and everything, and you pull them aside and say, oh, so by the way, what do I owe you for this? And I think your host would be insulted. Quite honestly, I think your host would be insulted. I don't think God gets insulted, because he understands who we are and what our tendencies are, more so than us, really. So it's a gift. And there's another part of it that is so hard on us, and that is there's no quid pro quo. There's no this for that. See, the heart of shame is contracts and trades. I need to make it transactional so that we can make sure we keep it even. And so the heart of shame is ladders, being able to measure how far I've gotten compared to other people who are below me on the ladder or above me on the ladder, contracts, and fulfilling the conditions of the contract. The minute the conditions are not met, the contract's void, null and void, or trade, whether it's trading our bodies for love, for intimacy, for whatever, or trading our skills to feel like we're useful and that somebody notices us. See, it's not all about skills for the money we make. Sometimes it's just there's something to be had for being functional, useful to people. But that reduces us to an object. And see, the heart of grace, when it comes to relationship, is covenant. What Jesus did in that moment is that he renewed the covenant with this woman that had been broken by the people around her. She thought that's how God worked. She really did. She thought that's how God worked through the community. And so really the only catch when it comes to it about grace is having an open heart to receive it. That's really the only quote-unquote catch. And so one last thing before we land this a little bit, and that is, what's so hard about grace? I mean, quite honestly, just to use a word that we throw a lot around a lot, even in the political realm, is it's a scandal. It's completely scandalous. I mean, the notion of God's love coming to us free of charge, no strings attached, goes against every instinct of humanity. And quite honestly, only Christianity dares to make God's love unconditional. It's the only religion out there that does that. Everything else is legalistic, contracts, and proving your worth by doing and behaving a particular way. So in a lot of ways, all the way throughout the Bible, God seems to show a marked preference for real people over good people. He has a distinct preference for real people over good people. Now, can real people be good people? Of course they can. But not all quote-unquote good people are real. They're doing good for something. It's a trade, right? And so grace is so very hard because it violates these various areas for us. And because of that, then, we love to talk about it and rhapsodize about it, but we don't have the first clue about how to live grace because we think it's a pass. Give me some grace. I have students sending me SOS emails after Thanksgiving all the way up to finals week because their grades are not what they had hoped them. And oftentimes I'll get this phrase, I just need some grace. And I don't say it because I have some common sense. But I don't say it. But what I could say is, you got all the grace you need. It's not about grace. It's about saving you from the consequences of whatever the reasons are that you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And so the challenge, I think, oftentimes, not challenge, but I think the question that inevitably comes up is, okay, all right, you got me. I fit into at least one of those, maybe more of them, rather uncomfortably, I might say. But how do I move from one to the other? I mean, how do I move from a non-grace position? Philip Yancey refers to it as ungrace, to a grace-based position. And quite honestly, not easily at all. And something that Brené Brown says quite frequently is shame flourishes in darkness, in shadows, which means if we're going to defeat shame and reinstall grace into our way of understanding and thinking about ourselves, our understanding and thinking about God, and our understanding and thinking about other people, then we have to figure out how to defeat shame while also installing grace back into the picture here, with a clear picture of what shame or what grace actually is. Because grace is not a get out of jail card. It's not that. Actually, in a lot of ways, grace is so much more powerful when it comes to human behavior, because it starts with the heart rather than just simply only just changing behavior. And that it, the point isn't that the behavior change occurs. I mean, it is. I need to take a step toward changing things. But the example oftentimes I will point to is that our heart, out of our heart, Proverbs 4:23 makes it very clear, flows the wellspring of life. It is a well. And we tend to pay attention to all the things that come out of that well and end up downstream where it starts affecting the people of our lives. So we tend to clean out all the downstream stuff without going back upstream to the well itself and to see what's contaminating the well. And that's where we start. It's about our heart. Desires, motivations, dreams, desire. Oh, I already said desires, passions, the things that move us. That's the heart of the matter. And that's where we start. Does it change instantaneously? No, it can't. It can't. If it does, it's nothing short of a miracle. And if it does, it ends up short-circuiting the hard work of understanding or at least taking the time to explore what's contaminating my well. And it can be lies about God. It can be lies about myself. It can be lies about the world around me and the people that populate it. It can be lies about a lot of different things. But I have to take the time to grab hold of them and identify and label them for what they are. Labeling them for what they are is the beginning of change. My old friend Brennan Manning said exactly the same thing. You cannot change that which you won't accept. And acceptance means labeling. It means identifying. It means giving it a name. And then I can start doing that. And you need to find like-minded people who want to talk about life that way. The Bible is helpful. I'm not saying it isn't. But if we're not going to be honest before the Bible with people to bring it into our lives honestly, not just focus only on somehow it's going to magically change us, but talk about the stuff that we struggle and wrestle with day in and day out, it's little more than a talisman or a relic, rather than the God-breathed word that is meant to get to the deepest parts of us and allow us to have real victory there. And guess what happens? Our behavior changes. It does. It can't not. But we don't believe that to be true. We don't really think grace is powerful enough. And the reality is, shame is very, very efficient. It makes things happen very quickly. And so we choose efficiency over effectiveness. And that's understandable. You can have both. It's just not in the amount of time that is demanded of us or we demand of ourselves. So anyway, I got onto this. This one tends to really get my motor running because I see two different elements, or not two, but use two different lenses to see this with. Because I see the people that have been harmed by the church in being just like that woman, that for whatever reason, whether they are, it's something that has happened to them, or it's something they can't do anything about, or if it's even stuff that they have brought on themselves, they have been ostracized in a variety of ways, and they've given up. And that there really is any grace anywhere for them. Not that there isn't grace, but there's no grace for them. And that's happening. I can tell you because I've interacted with a lot of the younger generation, and a lot of them believe that the way that my generation lives our lives in relationship to Jesus is who Jesus is. Is that unfair? Of course it is. It always will be unfair. But then it doesn't take us one step further to say, well, maybe I better look at what my relationship with Jesus is really like. And is my relationship with Jesus not built only on knowing him well, but it is relating to him daily on a regular basis. And we spend more time knowing about Jesus than we do actually knowing him. And that's a bigger topic, really, when it comes right down to it, as to what's the difference. And that would actually connect up with what I was talking in the last podcast about how we decouple knowledge from living. And that same thing is true, the knowledge about Jesus versus the living with him. And that's very much a part of it. So this stuff is at the heart, if I may use that phrase, at the heart of Stained Glass International. And the reason it got its name is because of that, is my desire and hope of bringing up a vision of becoming people that can be known and be seen. And stained glass obstructs both. And so we adopt the very thing as a name, the very thing that we're trying to dismantle. So SGI is off and running. We are in need. I will be very honest and open to you. It is not cheap starting up a nonprofit organization like ours. And so anything that you can consider in partnering with us to get us off on a good step and be able to start funding our various initiatives. One, of course, is a silent retreat for college students. Another is just a training and an opportunity to have speaking engagements and other things, including the podcast. Podcast is not cheap either. There are plenty of resources that we would love to be able to develop that we're not able to just yet. I know that that's all in good time. But at the same time, that's a current and present need, if you will. So as an organization itself, SGI is devoted to providing resources and retreats and training for next-gen Christians and developing, eventually I would love to see us develop counselors with this kind of sensitivity to the spiritual domain and the spiritual formation of the people that they work with, even in the counseling context. And that's an extra layer of training, I think, an extra layer of mentoring, really, probably, to be more succinct. So if you have questions about any of this stuff that I'm talking about tonight or anything else that comes to mind, you're welcome to DM me on Instagram. We can be found at the Psych Monologues. If you have a question about anything, send it our way. On Facebook, you can find me at ray.mitch and LinkedIn, drmitch. So any of those social media outlets, you can find us. We have added a new feature. I think I've mentioned this before, where you can subscribe to the website itself. And so you'll be notified of any new content that shows up. And slowly but surely, we'll start adding some new things that you'll be notified of the changes on the website, so you can come back and check it out. My hope is at some point to separate the two entities, if you will, on the web. So SGI will have its own website, and then I'll have mine, the Out of Ashes website. If you want to find us and subscribe to the podcast, it can be in any outlet that you find or use consume podcasts. You can do that, Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, whatever. You can find us in any one of those places as well. And like I mentioned, all of your gifts, all of your contributions are tax deductible. Like I said, we're coming up on the end of the year, and you're considering gifts for nonprofits or charities that you might want to support. We would humbly ask you to consider supporting us. If you prefer to send us a check, you're welcome to do that as well. You can simply make your check out to Stained Glass International. The address is Stained Glass International, P.O. Box 160, East Lake, Colorado, 80614. So that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for joining me and taking the time out of your busy schedule to support what we're doing here and to listen to my rantings off and on about a variety of topics. Hopefully God will use that in whatever way he sees fit in your week ahead. But until the next time, next Sunday, when I sit down and do it again, love ya. Later. Bye.